You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to another show here, the Americans for Truth Hour. We are happy to have a guest from our recent Truth Academy. His name is Ryan Zorba. My name is Peter LaBarbera. Americans for Truth is a single-issue group devoted, sort of a David and Goliath fight. We're opposed to the powerful homosexual activist movement. It's called, the acronym keeps growing. It's GLBTQ. Not exactly sure what that last Q stands for, but GLBT stands for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender movement. They've got the full backing of the Obama administration, although they're complaining that they're not moving fast enough. Obama isn't. But we had a wonderful Truth Academy August 5th to 7th at the Christian Liberty Academy, and we're very thankful for Christian Liberty Academy hosting us. One of our speakers was Ryan Zorba. Ryan, are you there?
Yeah, definitely. How are you doing, Pete?
Great, Ryan. I know you're out on the West Coast here. And Ryan spoke. He was our youth speaker, and he did a great job. I want to tell people briefly about the Truth Academy and how you can order the tapes. The Truth Academy is going to be an ongoing session in which an ongoing sort of teach-in in which we're basically instructing people how to respond to the homosexual activist agenda. Of course, they say there is no agenda, right, Ryan?
Yeah, in a lot of cases, they'll mock this notion of an agenda. However, in 1985, Marshall Kirk and Hunter Madsen penned an article called The Gay Agenda in a pro-sodomy movement magazine called Christopher Street. And this agenda laid out their plan to shift the central issue in the debate over homosexuality away from sodomy, a behavior, and toward a psychosexual pseudo-identity called gay, so that they could force opponents of sodomy into a position where they'd be seen as attacking civil rights of so-called gay citizens.
And attacking, quote, gays themselves, attacking people.
Rather than a specific behavior, exactly. That's the gay agenda.
And that was masterfully done, Ryan, as we can see. And we talked about it at the Truth Academy about the language. And I want to be talking about that with you. But before we go on, I think you're going to want to get Ryan's tapes. You're going to want to get the whole Truth Academy. And you can do so by going to AmericansForTruth.org, AmericansForTruth.org. On the right side, there's a button, Truth Academy. Click that, and then it'll take you to a page where you can order. I believe that the CD set is $119. The DVD set is $179. That's video, and the audio, the CD, is $119. You will enjoy this. If you want to learn what the gay agenda is about these days, how far it's advanced, order those tapes or the DVDs or the CDs. It is a lot of lectures. Ryan, I think we have 21 lectures plus a panel discussion. So it was a pretty comprehensive event, don't you say?
Absolutely. I mean, the sheer number of speakers and lectures, it was incredibly educational for everybody in attendance, including the speakers, over the course of the entire weekend.
And Ryan, I want to talk to you about, one thing that I was impressed about you is you towards the end of the whole thing. I'm so glad I invited you to speak, because there's a lot of people in our movement, maybe people like me. We've seen so much. We've seen so many losses. Sometimes there's a tendency to say, hey, you know, what's the point? And that's one of the reasons we started the Truth Academy, is to say, hey, no, you know, you've got to stay involved, because our very freedoms are at risk at the hands of this so-called gay movement. But at one point towards the end of the whole thing, you stood up there and basically just laid out an action plan for getting back and changing minds and engaging people. And you didn't seem daunted at all. And I think maybe that's a product in some way of you're younger, you're coming up, and you're not a quitter. And so you're not intimidated by this battle. In fact, you want to engage it with ideas.
Absolutely. And we need to go on offense if we're going to win this thing. We can't just be on perpetual defense. We've got to You know, there are a number of things that we've got to do. Would you like me to lay out some of the strategy here?
Lay out some of it. But I mean, why don't you just talk about? I mean, you want to go out and you want to engage people. Talk about how, you know, without getting too deep, where you think you should, how you would engage a young person on this issue who says, "Hey, Ryan, you know, why do you hate gays?" I mean, you must have gotten that question a million times.
Yeah, just let them know that you don't hate gays and that it's most likely that the gays, in fact, hate you, as some of the protesters admitted outside of the Truth Academy conference. A lot of gays hate Christians. They do. They have a hate for Christian ethics. They don't believe it's okay to be Christian and be against homosexuality. And, you know, that's it. But as far as strategy is concerned, I think that we've got to get together some sort of a national field program. Been field representatives out all over the country to build pro-family chapters that are dedicated to the various issues associated with the family, and then just let those chapters sort of build themselves up over time and have a conference once a year. And I think that that's one of the major things that the pro-family movement is and has been lacking. These national field programs are incredibly effective, and then we've got to get.
Now you're talking about something. You're talking about something along the lines that Morton Blackwell does with the Leadership Institute.
Yeah, he does. He has a campus leadership program, and he's got a field program for college students where he's got over 1,000. He built up over 1,000 conservative clubs on college campuses in a couple of years.
Yeah,
and
because the campus, you know, Ryan, the campus. I mean, how long have you been out of school?
I've been out of school since June 2007.
And where did you go to school?
Cal State San Bernardino.
Cal State. Now you know how desolate the arguments can be on the college campus because we basically don't even engage the college campuses. It seems like these young people, people in college, they need to hear from former homosexuals like we did at the Truth Academy. They need to know that people can leave the lifestyle. They need to hear your natural moral law arguments. But a lot of times there's nothing going on in the campuses. So I think that you're right about that idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, once we've, you know, I mean, I'm talking about a field program for adults and for college students, but as far as college students are concerned, they need to be taught by pro-family leaders, journalists, et cetera, how to counter the claims of the main pro-sodomy arguments perpetrated by the left, and they need to learn how to counter those claims. If they can't counter those claims, they're just going to tuck their tail and run. They're not going to have any confidence. As we build up their knowledge base with education, they're going to get more confident, and they're going to be able to respond better to, you know, when they're challenged on this issue on campus, and then they won't abandon the issue.
Well, and you're right about that. And why don't you say, now, you mentioned the protest. We were hit with a protest about 75 protesters. Some of them were from the Marxist Gay Liberation Network in Chicago. Others looked like they were kids, probably from gay straight alliances or whatnot in the Naperville area or in the suburban Chicago area. But when we got hit by this protest, and you walked right out into the crowd. In fact, talk about giving lie to the term homophobia. If you were a real phobe, if you feared gay people, you certainly wouldn't have wandered into an angry crowd, and several other speakers. Tell us about how you right there you engaged somebody on basically the appropriate on the rightness of homosexual behavior. Tell us about that encounter you had at the protest.
Yeah, absolutely. I approached him. I said, "Do you think that it's moral to engage in sodomy?" And then the guy, he responded saying, yes. And I said, "Well, what moral system backs you up?" And he said, "Oh, I believe in a higher power." And I said, "Really? So you believe in God? And what God is this? And where is it written? Or where is the message delivered to you that he's okay with same gender sex acts?" Because I certainly haven't heard of this God before. Maybe it's Baal. I don't know. Maybe they're into pagan nature worship, and maybe they're referring to the goddess Mother Earth or something. I have no idea. But he couldn't respond at all. And, you know, that's part of the problem is these students have never been given a sort of answer to the question of morality. What is ethics? What is morality? Most people don't know that there's the divine law, which supersedes all other law. And then beneath that, there's the natural law. Beneath the natural law is constitutional or positive law, and beneath that is the common law. And when you get into the natural law, there are certain, you know, things that we can know are right or wrong using our reason. And you know, these things that we can know are right or wrong by way of our reason are a matter of simple logic. And, you know, there's theoretical reason and practical reason. And practical reason is the reason of ethics. And if you're interested in it, Google practical reason. And it's very simple to prove moral statements using practical reason. And we need to get people to get educated on practical reason, because it's very simple to argue that homosexuality is immoral from a practical reason standpoint.
You make the physiological case. You make the case about your bodies. The morality doesn't match their so-called morality, because the homosexual activists now say that they have a moral cause. It doesn't match the function of their bodies. Talk about that.
Well, absolutely not. You know, they've got they conceptualize themselves as an abstract consciousness inhabiting an impersonal body. Like, they think they're a ghost in a machine. And but in fact, we are our body. Our body is an important part of who we are. The self-evident procreative physical design of the body is a big deal. You know, if you aren't your body, where are you?
Right. Right.
It's kind of funny. And
Hold that thought, Brian. We're going to come right back. We're talking to Ryan Zorba, who is a speaker at our Truth Academy. You can order the tapes from the Truth Academy at AmericansForTruth.org. That's AmericansForTruth.org. It's a wonderful, wonderful conference. We'll be right back with Ryan Zorba in a minute. Welcome back to the Americans for Truth Hour. My name is Peter LaBarbera. I'm president of a group called Americans for Truth about homosexuality. We're based outside Chicago, Illinois, the city that gave you Barack Obama. I'm sorry. I had nothing to do with it. We're talking to Ryan Zorba. Ryan was a speaker at our Truth Academy, which was held August 5th to 7th at the Christian Liberty Academy in Arlington Heights, Illinois. It was a spectacular event. If you care about the homosexual agenda, what it's doing to our nation, how it's corrupting young people, how it threatens our freedom, how it threatens the institution of marriage itself and morality, and even Christianity, because they're trying to redefine Christianity, then you need to get these tapes. It's that simple. The CD set is available for $119, I think, and the DVD set is $179. This is a three-day comprehensive seminar, went all the way through morning till night, probably a bit much, but one of our speakers was Ryan Zorba. Go to AmericansForTruth.org and hit the Truth Academy button on the right. It'll guide you to a page where you can order by credit card, or you can just send a check-in, but I highly encourage you to do that. And we're talking to Ryan Zorba here. Ryan's a young man who's got a lot of guts. He took on CPAC, which is the Conservative Political Action Conference. He took them on for basically allowing a homosexual activist group to sponsor it. They're a conservative. They call themselves conservative. And it begs the question, Ryan, what are they conserving? How can conservatives embrace any part of the homosexualist movement?
Right. They cannot. If you could consider yourself a conservative, you cannot embrace any aspect of the homosexual radical pro-sodomy agenda. It has nothing to do with conservatism. The conservative movement is historically made up of three legs: the classical liberals, the traditionalists, and the anti-communists. And more recently, you know, crunchy cons have entered, as have neocons and some others into the coalition. But in no way, shape, or form is there any historical precedent for pro-sodomy conservatives. Not only that, but you know, Karl Marx himself wrote that the family is inextricably, that the bourgeois natural family is inextricably intertwined with capitalism. And homosexuals, Harry Hay, the founder of the homosexual movement, modern, quote, gay movement, which is a political. If you're gay, it's a political term. It's not an identity. It's not an identity. It's a political group.
And it's a term we got to stop. We got to stop using so cavalierly. And I confess to having done that myself because it's just so cumbersome to always say homosexual. But you're right because it's a bogus artificial construct.
Right, and I even go beyond the term homosexual and refer to either same sex attraction or he or she engages in sodomy, because that's really what it is. It's a sexual addiction. It's a habit of mind, but it is not an identity in any way, shape, or form.
Okay, and, Ryan, before you get off into the conservative movement, I want to touch that, but I cut you off when you were talking about morality vis-a-vis the function, the natural function of our bodies. Could you sum that up, and then we'll go over to the conservative thing?
Yeah, really quickly, I'll sum up the first principle of reason and lay out the formula by which you can show that sodomy is an immoral act. Practical reason is grounded in a self-evident first principle called the good. And the good, in other words, is act in accord with some end or act for a purpose. Don't just act and react randomly and mindlessly without any, you know, commitment of will toward anything of value whatsoever. That there's no intelligibility in act in that. So the first principle of practical reason is act for a reason, whether it be to relax, whether it be to make money in order to feed yourself and your family, in order to do things that are ends unto themselves, like learn and have relationship with children and family and God. So act for a purpose. This is the first principle of ethics, act for a reason. Now, reason involves intelligibility. If our reason is going to tell us anything about the external world, there's got to be something, some information in the external world that our minds are accessing. And these are called intelligibles. They're the ideas or the definitions of what things are. And our mind abstracts those ideas, that information from reality, and basically jumps from information to information by way of reason. A syllogism, a major premise, a minor premise, and then it moves discursively to a conclusion. And the practical syllogism, this process is called conscience, conscience. And the self-evident procreative natural design of the human being, entails a purpose or an end of action, a primary end for the reproductive organs in act.
Wait a minute, Brian. You said design. That means we're not just destined. We actually have a design. Our bodies reflect a design.
Exactly, and I like, that's kind of why I like the word creature and creation when talking about the universe or Earth or the cosmos, because it implies a creator. And yes, a design implies a designer. And we're self-evidently physically designed or oriented toward the opposite sex. So the terms heterosexual, homosexual, I almost think are false terms in and of themselves. It should be procreative or non-procreative type sex acts. And that's where we should delineate, across the board. There are procreative type sex acts that are intelligible. And they're intelligible for two reasons. Number one, because they generate a new embodied being, a baby, and then that baby is endowed with reason and capable of using it for well or ill. And reason implies instruction, and instruction takes time. It takes longer to teach babies to reason well than it does to teach birds to fly. So the father ought to remain with the mother the entire time required in order to ensure the proper education of the child. So the second intelligible end of the reproductive organ in act is the unity of spouses in the interest of the education of the child. So these are the two intelligible ends. And when sex is engaged in for reasons other than that, it's unintelligible. And unintelligible acts are to the world of action what self-contradictions are to the rules of thinking. They're meaningless. They're meaningless combinations of words, meaningless combinations of actions. And they don't suddenly acquire meaning simply because the words are spoken or the actions are engaged in. And that's what homosexuals are trying to do. They're trying to bring an unintelligible, self-contradictory act and call it rational and call it moral and call it practically rational. And it's a lie. And if we were to you know, allow this precedent to move through the system, especially our legal system that's really based on rational argumentation. You know, what other laws could be debunked or overturned, you know, just because a person feels like doing something? I mean, that's really the essence of so-called same-sex marriages. I feel like being with my partner. Well, eros or romantic feelings aren't good in and of themselves.
Well, Ryan, it's like how many things are wrong? Just the feelings. I mean, how many guys feel like they're tired of their marriage and so they just leave? I mean, the basis of feelings, but it is just so fraudulent. And what about multiple partner couples? We know that there are multiple partner unions. Why shouldn't they have the right to get married? Hey, they feel the love. It's ridiculous. But I want to ask you about, you made a good point in the talk. I think you addressed, if I'm not mistaken, the common argument on marriage where some pro-homosexual activist says, well, Ryan, there are people who can't have children. Should they not be able to get married? And you talked about the falsity of that argument taking because they're honing in on an exception to the rule, and they're making that the basis of their argument. Could you go over that?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a point that gets a lot of conservatives stuck, and we really need to educate conservatives on how to answer it. The problem of infertility is it's a problem in particular, but not in principle. And in other words, infertility is in natural law speak an accidental privation. In other words, a non-substantial difference. A non-substantial difference is like when you get some wood and you chop it in half. Well, it's still wood. It's just different shape. Different size, different weight. A substantial difference, however, would be if you burned wood. It is no longer wood. So that's sort of the difference. And infertility is merely an accidental difference. It's not a substantial difference. You know, take the eye, for example, and blindness. This is an accidental privation. In other words, the fact that one part of the eye fails to function and allow you to see doesn't change the fact that it's still an eye, that the intelligible end of the eye is to collect light, and you know.
And so, what's happening is homosexual activists are throwing people off with these. Really, I mean, it's really a preposterous argument. I remember, you know, people saying, "Oh, Pat Buchanan doesn't have children, and he got married," or, you know, it's really, I mean, when you think about it, it's silly. But you have worked at giving people arguments back, because a lot of people just sort of shut up when they hear something like that.
Right, you're right, and you know, this whole notion is that this principle that that just because a part fails to function correctly, it doesn't change the end of the purpose of the whole, is implicit in the whole field of medicine. I mean, you know, we seek to cure blindness when and wherever we find it. And that's because we understand that just because one part of the eye doesn't function well doesn't mean that the whole eye should be called something else. You know, just because a man is missing an arm doesn't change the fact that he's still a man. And just because one part of the reproductive system isn't functioning and allowing for actual reproduction, it doesn't change the fact that it's still a reproductive system, and you can't just—I mean, it's an entire system that's built
right
into the human body,
as opposed to the homosexual lifestyle, which is counter-reproduction.
Yeah.
It's against
exactly.
Reproduction, has no purpose other than, I guess, hedonism, self-satisfaction. We're talking to Ryan Zorba. Ryan is a young conservative. We'll be back in a minute.
Are you sick and tired of homosexuality and gay marriage being celebrated by the liberal media and popular culture? Do you worry about the radical gay agenda being pushed on young children in schools? Are you worried that the gay movement will destroy America's religious freedoms? And are you offended that Christians are called bigots and homophobes just because they agree with God that homosexual behavior is wrong? Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is a single-issue group devoted to exposing and fighting the gay agenda. They are not about hate, but love for God's truth. They are Christians, so instead of celebrating homosexuality, they lift up the many ex-gays who have left it behind and now lead godly lives through Christ. But Americans for Truth needs your help. The gay lobby has lots of money, power, and media support, but it lacks truth. Please help keep this show on the air and educate America about the dangerous goals of this anti-Christian movement. Make your tax-deductible gift online today at AmericansForTruth.com. That's AmericansForTruth.com.
Welcome back to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Peter LaBarbera of Americans for Truth. Our website is AmericansForTruth.org. Americans for, that's F-O-R, truth.org. We're talking with Ryan Zorba. Ryan was one of our speakers at the Truth Academy, which was held in outside Chicago, August 5th to 7th. It was probably one of the most comprehensive pro-family conferences on homosexuality that have ever been held in the United States, and we plan to hold more. Looks like we may be going to Oklahoma next year, and we've got several other cities lined up, or at least interested, and I'm excited about it. And Ryan, did you enjoy the Truth Academy? Was it what you expected?
Absolutely. I mean, there were over 100 people in attendance. It was a lot of networking. I met a lot of people, learned a lot, especially from Cliff Kincaid, Gagnon, Rob Knight, Matt Barber, Renee Lindvaldson.
Let me correct you on that. Her name is Rena Lindvaldson. And actually, we counted the total number. The homosexual activists lied. They said there was Wayne Besson, who's, I guess, Wayne is to Truth what Bill Clinton is to fidelity. He said there was 20 to 30 people there. And actually, we totaled it up just to get the record straight. And there was about 85 that passed through the entire 3-day thing. That doesn't include speakers. That was one of Wayne's little pot shots. But
speakers, there are approximately 100 people there then.
Yeah. And the speakers were wonderful. And Ryan, I think I was very pleased with you did some things, unique things, and you continue to do unique things, which other leaders don't do, and I hope you stay in the movement, because I think you have a lot to accomplish in it. Give us about 3 minutes on the Born Gay hoax. You've got a book that you're working on. You've worked at shooting down the idea, which is we have all heard many times. Oh, I was born that way. This is who I am. Tell us about your work and why you called the book, or you're calling it, the Born Gay hoax.
Right. Prior to 1862, there is no record of a human being ever claiming to have been born gay. I mean, there's a record of sodomy throughout history, but it's usually attached to fertility cult worship, pagan nature worship, and things like that. It was a warrior cult in Greece and Pederastia. However, no one ever claimed to have been born gay, as if it was a fixed, biological, innate, unchangeable condition and identity. And in 1862, a guy named Karl Ulrich in Germany invented this sort of thing, that notion that people are born gay, is strictly as a political tool to repeal paragraph 175 of the German Penal Code, which criminalized sodomy. A guy named Henry Gerber in World War I went over to Germany, brought this notion back to America, molested a guy named Champ Simmons, who molested a guy named Harry Hay, who became an 18-year Communist Party leader and founder of the modern gay rights movement by way of a sort of national field program. He created chapters across the country, and they took off from there. And anyway, by way of Harry Hay, Frank Kameny, Marshall Kirk, and Hunter Madsen, the pro-sodomy movement in America has developed a sophisticated argument that people are, quote, born gay, although none of it's based in fact or reason. And in the 1980s, prior to the 80s, the gays weren't too keen on adopting this strategy in general. Why? Because they, in the 60s with free love and sexual revolution, they wanted to recruit. They had a place called Camp Sister Spirit where they'd recruit lesbians, and they'd all, you know, commonly recruit men into the homosexual lifestyle. But in the 80s, they lost Bowers versus Hardwick, the Supreme Court case that allowed states to continue to criminalize sodomy, and this loss left their movement desperate and galvanized, and they realized that the only way they could repeal the sodomy law going forward, or one of the ways they thought they could repeal it, was by way of minority status as a suspect class under the 1964 Civil Rights Act. But in order to gain minority status, you have to meet three criteria. You have to be powerless as a people group to help yourselves. You have to have suffered a long history of discrimination, and you have to have been born that way. It has to be an immutable characteristic. And that's the secret to understanding why, beginning in the mid-80s, pro-sodomy activists began to insist that they're, quote, born gay, Kirk and Madsen published a book called The Overhauling of Straight America, in which they discussed propagandistic tactics by which they could convince straights to consider people engaged in sodomy as victims. And then, you know, the book is full of quotes from pro-sodomy activists for the last, 30 years admitting that they are not born gay, admitting outright, we're using this as a political tool to make straights feel bad for us so that they're inclined by reflex to assume the role of protector over us. That is all we're doing. We could care less about you. We could care less about your, we want to destruct your, deconstruct your Christian morality and ethics because it's against us. If you stand in our way, we're going to attack you in any way, shape, or form by jamming techniques, harassment, intimidation, first verbally and then legally. That's their goal, is to normalize sodomy and to recruit into the lifestyle of sexual libertinism.
And Ryan, the born gay myth has been very, very useful. Now, I had a personal experience with one of the proponents of this, Dean Hamer, who was a researcher, and I want you to talk about him. But I just want to say quickly, I went to a homosexual activist event sponsored by PFLAG, which is a homosexual parents group. And Dean Hamer was the speaker. He was the one who had purported to find the beginnings of what might be later termed the gay gene. Well, of course, the media was all over it as the gay gene has been discovered, and they really heralded his study as the beginnings of finding the source of genetic homosexuality. And so I went to this session by Dean Hamer, and afterwards I just went up to him and said, hey, I had a publication at the time called Lambda Report, which was the genesis of Americans for Truth. It was a newsletter about the homosexual movement, and we quoted so-called gay sources. And so I went up to Dean Hamer, and I just introduced myself and told him I was there. Well, he flew into a rage. It was one of the most bizarre things I ever experienced. He started yelling and screaming. This man, Dean Hamer, who it turns out was a homosexual. He left his wife and family, became a homosexual, or I guess he would say he was always a homosexual. But he had every reason to rationalize his behavior and to cover himself by, hey, I was born this way. Anyways, he flew into this rage. He started yelling in front of the group of parents there. Some had left, but some were still standing there. And this guy starts ranting and raving that I was a stalker, that I wanted to kill homosexuals. He went berserk. It was so childish. It was so unbelievable. I wish I had my tape recorder running. I would have had it on tape for posterity. But this guy, Dean Hamer, was a crazed so-called gay activist. Yet this is the man who's born, gay gene research right at the time of the first gays in the military debate under Bill Clinton really accelerated that whole idea of being born that way. Now, talk about Dean Hamer and how that study was never replicated.
Right. Dean Hamer is a complete, total and utter fraud. He was turned in by a junior researcher on his own team for excluding pairs of brothers that contradicted his pre-planned experimental outcome.
Well, explain what the study was in the first place. It was comparing.
Stretch of the X chromosome. He stated that he found the quote gay gene, and it was maternally or passed down from the mother. And he basically did this in an effort to convince straight America that people are born gay and to assume the role of protector. And the headlines were splashed across grocery stores, shelves, and store walls across America, and it had a huge effect.
Was it Science Magazine? He was an NIH researcher, National Institutes of Health. One wonders why he was studying the gay gene, genetic homosexuality in the first place.
He was doing it under a grant to study Kaposi's sarcoma, a skin cancer that inordinarily affects men who have sex with men. So he wasn't even doing the study under the NIH. He just did this as an activist. He wasted the money he should have spent studying Kaposi's sarcoma and used it for this gay gene research. And he was actually charged with research improprieties by the National Institutes of Health's Office for Research Integrity for excluding his control group, for lying about his results. The study was never replicated. Researchers from Bynum Parsons from Ontario attempted to replicate his findings. Harvard scientists attempted to replicate his findings, and they never could.
And now Mr. Hamer is an activist, a pro-homosexual activist filmmaker. I know this because Diane Gramley, who's a great pro-family activist in Pennsylvania, has been harassed by this guy and his homosexual partner. So he's an activist filmmaker now. And yet people still rely on his work, his bogus research from before. I mean, you know, nobody sees the corrections, right, Ryan? They see the media reports. Oh, it looks like homosexuality is genetic. They don't see the correction. And so to this day, many, many people, millions of people have been influenced by that bogus study by this homosexual activist researcher.
Right. And this one really angers me, as does the twin study that was a false fraud and Simon LaVey's A brain hypothalamus study, because they're cited in college textbooks across the country. And the number one advocate in this nation for same-sex sodomy are college girls. They make these gay friends, and, you know, they think they're cute, and it's really sad. These lonely college girls make these gay friends, and then they promote homosexuality relentlessly, and it's unreal. And then they'll quote the hypothalamus, the gay gene, the gay twins, and they're all fraudulent studies. And you know, the Christian on the college campus or the conservative will just sit there with their jaw dropped because they don't know that those are fraudulent studies. They show up in their textbook at school. And these lesbian professors, who many of which are involved in witchcraft and Wicca, are sitting there quoting these studies as if they're legitimate. And these poor students are just being lied to, propagandized, euphemism on top of euphemism, lie on top of lie. They're walking through a hall of mirrors when they enter the college campus, and they don't know what to believe anymore. And it's sad, and it really makes me mad.
Okay, let's get to that again. I wanted to talk about this hypothalamus study, but we're talking to Ryan Zorba, who's a young conservative who spoke at our Truth Academy. You can get tapes at AmericansForTruth.org. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Americans for Truth Hour. This is Peter LaBarbera. We're in part one of our interview with Ryan Zorba. Ryan is a bright young man, young conservative, who spoke at our Americans for Truth Academy. We had that August 5th to 7th. It was a comprehensive conference against, educating people about the homosexual agenda. Ryan is also working on a book called The Born Gay Hoax. And Ryan, let me just ask you, is there any proof at all that people are born gay?
There is zero scientific evidence that proves that homosexuality is biologically determined. Zero. None. Null. There's nothing. There's no proof that people are born gay.
I wonder what the polls would show. I bet you the polls show roughly half the population. I don't know. I haven't seen a poll.
Probably believes that. It's ridiculous. And Robert Knight has a great piece on Concerned Women for America's website where he debunks a whole bunch of the studies, the neuroendocrine study, the finger length study, the eye blink study, the hormone.
We've only got 8 minutes left in this segment, but I wanted to touch on one thing. First of all, we want to reiterate the Dean Hamer, homosexual activist Dean Hamer. And by the way, the media did not report that he was a homosexual who'd left his wife. That study, he was never able to replicate it. And then other researchers tried to replicate this thing of I don't think he came right out and said, I found the gay gene, but he really purported to find the, you know, serious research on genetic homosexuality, never replicated.
Exactly. Never, ever replicated study. It has gone down in history as a total joke and a fraud.
What about the hypothalamus study?
They code for proteins. It's ridiculous on its face. This study of the gay gene.
Ryan, what about the hypothalamus, Simon LaVey? That's a whole different approach. He was saying that the brains were different, right?
He worked for the Salk Institute for Biological Studies in beautiful La Jolla, California, and he had a partner who was a homosexual, Richard Hersey, who died of AIDS. He went into deep depression, and he was reading one day and saw that there was a study that showed that the female hypothalamus in mice is half the size of the male hypothalamus, and suddenly he had an epiphany. Is the hypothalamus also smaller in females than males, and then in gay males than in regular males? And he published a study because, you know, he was also aware of a New York Times study which showed that Americans would be more sympathetic toward the pro-sodomy agenda if they believed people were born gay and assumed the role of protector over this supposed pseudo-minority class. And so he did this as a propagandistic tactic to gain sympathy for gays. And, yeah, his study is wrong for four or five reasons. He number one, he compared the brains of 13 men whose sexual orientation he did not know with the brains of 19 men whose sexual orientation he did not know. It is therefore, right there, impossible to make any claim based on his study. Number two, some of the men who were supposedly, quote, gay had larger hypothalamuses, even in his study, than some of the men who were, quote, straight. So some of his gays should have been straight and vice versa. He admits that his study proved nothing in the year 2000 after it had been thoroughly debunked by everybody on Earth. He wrote, I did not locate a gay center in the brain. I did not prove people are born gay. That is the most common mistake people make when interpreting my work. His work, his propaganda, he finally admitted it because he was forced to. And then
this is scientific,
not repeatable. It cannot be replicated. It has never been replicated.
This is incredible. Did the taxpayers pay for that study, or was it a private study?
I'm not sure on that.
Because the taxpayers did pay for Hamer's study, right?
They need to be reimbursed. You know, they should force them to reimburse them for that money.
Well,
they should be forced to pay it back.
Yeah, this is so incredible. What a scientific scam. And it's all the big motivation, as you said, is, hey, we know people are sympathetic. If we know they have no control over their sexual behavior, oh my God. Okay, so what's the next big one? Tell us about the, you got 4 minutes left. Tell us about the twin study.
The twin study was conducted by Bailey and Pillard from Boston University. Bailey, a homosexual, Pillard, a heterosexual. I might have that backwards. Double check for me. But Bailey turned Pillard in for excluding pairs of basically, they.
What did it purport to find, first of all?
That if one twin was gay, the other twin would be gay 50% of the time. First of all, in order for it to be genetic, they would have to be both gay 100% of the time. And identical twins, they always have the same features, et cetera. And
I don't understand how that helps them 50% of the time. How does that help the cause?
Right. It doesn't even prove it. But not only that, but then what happened was Bailey excluded his control group, just like Hamer did. He studied non-related brothers raised in the same household, and they turned out to be gay more often than the, quote, identical twins. So his study actually proved that environment causes same-sex attraction in the gay identity, not biology, because he found that non-related, where one brother is adopted and the other is not, or where they come from step families, when they are both gay more often than identical twins, and they're not related at all. And so, you know,
and I'm sure the media was right out there to report that, right, Ryan?
Well, he didn't release that in his conclusion, in his results. He did not release that. He hid that, and then Pillard finally turned Bailey in for not releasing that because he didn't want to be discredited as a scientist for this political reason and so he eventually was found out, but, you know, didn't change the fact that the gay twin study appeared on the headlines and was trumpeted across the country, and so many people heard it on the news that they give credibility to and just believed it. And then developed a sort of, oh, I feel bad for these guys. There's so many people out there that believe, that believe people are born gay. It's unbelievable. It is unbelievable.
Well, we're talking about pseudoscience working with pro-homosexual mass media. The media has become an arm of the homosexualist movement. And that's why it's so dangerous, because there's a lot of study on campuses in academia about the actual change that people experience, how thousands of people have overcome homosexual desires in their own life. That's not studied, but the universities are studying. They're desperate to prove that homosexuality is innate, and then you've got the media, which is also desperate to report that.
These people with self-centered attraction admit Ellen DeGeneres, her stepfather, attempted to molest her 3 times. Prior to that, her mother's autobiography, A Mother-Daughter Journey, shows that she was attracted to men. She had a boyfriend. She talked about how she was attracted to the singer Sting. And then she developed a fear for her stepfather, who kept trying to molest her, and then generalized it onto all men and developed substitutive same-sex attraction. And so dealing with her from a psychological standpoint to extinguish her same-sex attraction might not entail dealing specifically with the same-sex attraction, but it might include dealing with her fear of her stepfather and all men. And, but, you know, she's probably lost. Her identity as an actress, as a show host, as everything else is completely intertwined with this gay identity and this feminist political movement that she's.
But you bring up a great point, Ryan, and we're almost out of time here, which is the media does not report, you know, there's not a sense that the dysfunction, when they do report the dysfunction in the lives of open homosexuals, they don't report that it has any connection to their ideation, to their homosexual embrace of homosexuality.
They're afraid to, because they'll get called bigots and homophobes and slandered and weird pictures drawn of them on
right.
the internet.
Okay, we're going to have to drop it there. We're going to have to drop it till our next time, Ryan. Thanks so much for this first half of the interview, and we'll talk to you next week. We've been talking to Ryan Zorba. He was a speaker at the Truth Academy. The Truth Academy was a conference that we just held at Americans for Truth. I encourage you to get the tapes. It's a 21 CD or DVD set. You can get those at americansfortruth.org. Hit the button for Truth Academy on the right. Go out there, get the information, get informed, and take a stand in the culture like Ryan Zorba has. Peter LaBarber with Americans for Truth. Talk to you next week.
This was the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Tune in Saturdays at 11 p.m. to hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Stay informed and engaged on the issues of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with them as they work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. The Americans for Truth Hour, Saturdays at 11 p.m. on AM 1160.